This is the Life in the Front Office Plus, where we dive deeper into personal and professional development, share nuggets and highlights from previous episodes, and bring you new content to provide insights and perspectives beyond the front office. Enjoy today's episode. So let's talk about how you even get to the CEO seat. You know, one of our co-hosts, Andy Dolich, will say, well, you know, when he was president of multiple sports organizations, he'd ask, like, how do I get to president? And one of the guys that was president at the time said, well, you can't be president if you're not president. And he's like, what? Like, how does that make sense? So did you ever get the advice of, like, you can't be CEO unless you're CEO?
You know what? I never got that advice, but I think that rings totally true. You know, I started my career in retail, and I had played basketball in college. Was fortunate. I played a small school. We won a national championship my senior year. So it was like all the culmination of all the hard work I put in kind of paid off. And then I got done and I was like, oh shoot, what am I going to do? And I realized I had no experience. And so, well, how do you get experience without experience? Right. It's that exact same thought where I'm like, I interviewed at Quicksilver, which was in our building. I interviewed with 50 people and everyone's like, okay, great. You have no experience. I'm not going to hire you. Right. I'm like, well, how do I get it? Someone's got to hire me to get experience. And so I started my career in retail and I realized I never wanted to be on the retail side. I wanted to be in clothing. I knew that. So I started there and then same thing. It's like, well, that's fine, but you only have retail experience. You can't get outside of that. And so for me to actually get out, I had to open a retail store for a wholesale company with the promise that if I opened it, I staffed it, I could come on the other side. And so it's a little bit of what he's saying. How do you get there without getting there? And so I was the first employee hired at Travis Matthew, and I, you know, my 6-year career prior to Travis Matthew, you know, I always believed, and I'm not sure this is the best mantra for kids nowadays, because I think they, you know, everybody wants everything immediately, but I always believed I had talent. I had enough intelligence. If I just had an opportunity, I'm not going to ask for anything. I'm just going to go take it. Right. And that's kind of what I did. And I don't mean it in an aggressive manner. I just mean, I'm going to give everything I have to this brand, just like I did with basketball. And honestly, just like I did in retail, even though I knew that wasn't the career path for me. And so that's what I did with this brand, is I gave it everything I had and sort of put my head down. And I did every job for the company. For the first 3 years, I was heading up operations, heading up merchandising, heading up sales. I would make the sale, put it in the system, pack the box and ship it, which, you know, sounds kind of silly, but you know, the first 2 years we had no money and that's what it took. And then through that process, you learn, okay, to have success, I always tell my wife, like, she's like, well, you're doing everything. Why aren't you getting paid this or that? I'm like, babe, the janitor doesn't get paid the most money in the company, right? Like, but I'm willing to go do those steps, right? So let's play the process. And as you grow, you realize the best thing you can do is find your niche. Like, what are you good at? Where are you strong? And go drive that. Stop trying to take everything. So I got about halfway through my tenure with the company and I sat with Travis and he was like, look, you got to get out of ops. Like, operations is not your thing. And I actually really enjoyed it at the time. And thank goodness we had that conversation. I'd be terrible at operations at 200 million, right? And so I went on the sales and product route and best decision I ever made. And I tell people in our business, you think a CEO means you have to own everything. It doesn't. You have to specialize. And then for me, I hired an incredible head of ops, incredible head of finance and accounting, which has allowed me to have that success. So, you know, my story is a lot of luck, a lot of hard work. You know, if I was telling other people how to become a CEO, I think it's that it's figure out what's your niche. What are you great at? Go drive that. And then also tell people what you're not good at. Right. I work so well with Travis because for me, I always told him when I made him and I made some big mistakes. I made some costly mistakes for the company. But the first thing I did is say, I screwed up. And that conversation is so easy. It becomes, oh, okay, well, let's do better next time. I absolutely will do better next time. Right. So, it is hard to be a CEO without being a CEO. And I think you want to be careful of being too ambitious. I probably wasn't ambitious enough. I probably could have taken the role a few years earlier, but I love the partnership that I had with Travis and he was ready to pass it to me. And I wasn't ready for him to leave. And since he has, it's been so rewarding when you're driving the ship versus being the passenger, it's definitely a different feeling for sure. And there's just not one way to do it. That's the one thing I've learned. You listen to a lot of business leaders and they've got the blueprint. Here's how you do it. And it's just not true. Like there's many ways to do it. And the next CEO of Travis Matthew could be specialized in operations and he could hire somebody under him that's a product and sales expert, right? It's absolutely doable. And when I had a conversation with CEO Callaway, it's kind of what he told me. He's like, look, you're running like 75% of the business. It's okay that you don't know this 25% that well. Well, hire for it. And you're a great, you know, people manager. and you'll grow that person. And so that's, there's many ways to do it. And that would be the advice I give people. Don't box yourself into, you know, I have to be this to be in that job. You don't. Everyone can do it differently. Well, so to back it up, pandemic hit, right? And it was like, okay, we're just trying to survive, right? We just gotta like, what do we do from an inventory standpoint? What do we do 8 to 12 months out to keep this business? We know pandemic. So at this point, it's like, if we have to liquidate or sell stuff, it's now. We got to set ourselves up for 21 success, meaning we're, whatever happens the next, and we didn't know, is it going to be a month? Is it going to be 6 months? We were closed down for about 3 months in general. And so, you know, bigger companies start panicking, right? It's like, sell everything, get cash, right? And so we actually had a cash infusion, which was great. So we made great decisions for 21, but really 20 was about like right-sizing the business, right? And then we got, you know, a couple months into 21 and we saw the forecast and we went, oh, we're a growth company now, we're back, right? And I started preaching to people, find a way, right? That's kind of like my slogan, find a way, we're a growth company. Like, and that's a big diversion, even from where we were 3 years ago, we're growing 20, 30%, you know, no, this thing's on a rocket ship and it's taking off. And I tell our people, look, I know I'm going 100 miles an hour, I'll slow down to 80, I'm not going the speed limit and do not ask me to stop. So that's where we hit. So we're February, March of 21, and I'm with our marketing team. I'm like, okay, we need to stop thinking like a small company, right? We were private till 17. We had everything's return on investment, right? We go spend, what do I get back? If I don't get anything back, I don't do it, right? And so we got to start making some steps here. And I said, we got all these incredible ambassadors, right? We have a ton of guys in NHL too. And we need to sign a guy at some point. But we have all these incredible ambassadors, and you'll see scene wearing is the term we use, right? So, oh, some Wes Welker's wearing a hat or somebody's wearing this. And it's like, great. And my family thinks it's cool. And maybe my friends do, but like, who actually knows they're wearing it? It's great that they do it, but we can't use it. And I said, a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo, right? He's going into our store at Santana Row in Northern California all the time. Like, great dudes, always wearing the product, like for free, giving us, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's like, why don't we work a deal with Jimmy? He's already wearing it. Why not talk to Jimmy and say, hey, do you want to do something with us? And, you know, it's going to be modest, but like, let's do something together. And then, you know, you've got a deal. So we're taking care of you. And in turn, we're going to ask some things to you, some photo shoots, video. And Jimmy's been a home run. Like, he's probably as good looking as any model we could ever find. He fits the product well. But that was the idea. And I said, look, I want somebody in the NBA and the NFL and MLB. And we got so lucky and hit a home run in the NFL, getting two starting quarterbacks. Matt Ryan's the other one. And then in the NBA, Alex Caruso, he was with the Lakers, like total hometown legend. If you've seen him, he's got a million followers on Instagram. He's kind of like got a cult following. It's awesome, dude. And then Corey Seager, who I'm not sure if you saw, but just signed like a $330 million deal. So that was the idea. The challenge you have, it's not just, you know, getting a deal done with these guys. To really activate these guys, it's like 2 to 3 times as much. But we're at a point in our brand that some of the other digitally native brands are lapping us, not as a whole, but in e-com, because they just spend. And we're not the brand that's just going to say, we don't want to make a profit, because a lot of these companies put everything they have back into ad spend. So if our ROAS, return on ad spend, is like 10 to 1, it's ridiculously good, right? We're not going to drop that to 1 to 1 and lose all of our profit. Because we want to invest in our people and other things like that, but that's probably too high. And so the idea was, let's stop worrying about just revenue and let's invest in future brand loyalty and new customer acquisition. And so that was a big shift for us. And so pivoting to Pratt, that was a totally different deal. I did want somebody outside of sports, because we're that sports lifestyle. And I think we did need that pure lifestyle play. We started trying to go after Matt McConaughey. That was like, you know, we were shooting for the moon on that one. The main reason why he has an incredible foundation. And my idea was, look, we're never going to afford a Matt McConaughey. I don't know what he costs, $10 million a year. Like, that's not our business. And again, we're not going to give all of our profit to Matt McConaughey, even though he's great. So the idea was, why don't we find someone that's super charitable and maybe we can partner with them? And in 2020, pandemic hit, we had a charitable goal of $100,000, and we had layoffs, pay cuts, everything that everyone else had. And it was like, how do I donate $100,000 to charity when our people are getting killed here, right? And I came up with an idea. Well, what if we partner with Oscar De La Hoya, who was a good friend of the brand at the time, and do a charitable sale, and we donate 100% of the proceeds to his charity, which is an incredible charity. It's a charter school. 100% underprivileged, 95% minority, and they sent a ton of kids to college. We ended up raising $550,000 for Oscar. So really awesome. It's going to send a ton of kids to college. And then it was like, well, we're competitive, right? We're sports people. Well, can I donate $1 million? Like, let's donate $1 million next year if we can. And we got Callaway sign off on that. So we went after, and we heard Chris was a big fan of the brand. And so we started that conversation, and we started with, hey, you know, what are the charities you love? And he was going to be the spokesperson for the Special Olympics. And it was like, we love that charity. Let's go. And so that's what we did. We ran and we did a sale. We ended up donating $1.1 million to Special Olympics, which is a historic day for the brand and for Chris and for us. And then he loved it so much. He's like, let's do something for the next year. Let's do it. And so I don't know how we got it done. We're pinching ourselves. And it's the responsibility. And he's so perfect. He's Travis Matthew is about fun. And it's about looking great. And you can't do that better than him. Like, if you've seen the ads we've done with us, he does such a good job of going, like, the Travis Matthew guy wants to look good, but he doesn't want to be the best dressed guy. He's not trying that hard. And he wants to make fun of himself a little bit. He does such a great job of that. And he really embodies the spirit of what we do here.
Thanks for listening to today's episode on the Life in the Front Office Plus. And remember to share with a friend or colleague, leave a review, and tune in to each weekly or monthly episode across our shows.